Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
The Accidental Quantum Physicist, probably episode 13. Amazing. I thought I'd probably do three episodes. We've talked a lot about basically how people's traditional ideas of point particles are basically embarrassing, sort of embarrassing, fraud, fake news from Danish fake news particles, and it's wave functions, and wave functions just aren't an alternative to particles, they are an alternative to particles. If I could spell that in big letters, in that wave functions, one aspect are a mathematical telephone book of numbers, you know, so for every position in space there is a number associated, or two numbers associated with in space, and they don't have surfaces, they have these properties, wave functions, and there's heaps of great things. So essentially, a electron changing shape emits a light particle. It emits shapes by just sort of pulsing in shape wave function to the next one, and it interacts, it actually levers off space. If you can imagine a force of me pushing against the bed, it's equivalent to electron pushing against the prevailing electric field, and it manipulates. And so you see a light particle, that is a little electron just sort of settling down, sitting in its chair, sort of like the sound of something popping like that. So that's sort of an interesting thing to know, and so the mass of it is the dipole transition moment, and there's a sort of, I might get into the mass at some stage. Look, one of the things is that although the mass is, I wouldn't say it's quite hard. I'm just trying to think what you would call it. It's, it's not your usual account. Like, yeah, if you, the mass that you teach people to go down to the shops probably ain't going to be good enough to teach them about electronics. That's probably, unfortunately, the maths about sort of maths of cooking might be, it is, you know, the fundamental life skills maths is not going to get you quantum mechanics. But that being said, if you don't do the maths, you it's like not doing maths. You can't do tax returns. If you don't do the maths, you know, compound interest is getting a bit of a complex. Since there is a little bit of overlap between sort of pyramid scheme getting fabulously wealthy and depending how you go into how a wave function goes into a barrier, or having your fortunes drain away. And of course, if you get fabulously wealthy, that's great, but the sum of your wealth is one. You know, you've only got $1 fabulously wealthy, so it means that the amount of money you're investing at the moment you go into the scheme to get one, it's goes up. So there is some sort of overlap here. So what I wanted to do, and look, there's lots of you know, what is it, people go blah blah blah, quantum mystery, quantum jumping, like they don't jump, quantum tunneling, oh this is how it does, Fourier analysis does that one out, what is it, faster than light communication, yep, one thing I affect over here affects something over there, faster than the speed of light. But the information about that effect can only travel at the speed of light. So, you know, it's tantalizingly close to giving you greater insight into what the universe is. Like quantum mechanics, like if you're doing quantum mechanics, yeah, it's okay looking at electron and looking at that. But you really have to consider the box and dice, the space, and the way the energy is stored in space, and what light is in terms of space. So you can't have light going in a vacuum. You know, we can't have light going in a void. So a space is different from a void. Space is space. It's got an electric field strength. It's got a inductance. It's space travels. It's light traveling it at the speed of light, and it stores energy. So you can have a bunch of space with, you know, a lot of watts of energy sitting in it or entering into it and leaving it at the speed of light. So it's a space mightn't weigh anything, but it definitely can contain energy, electric field. You know, it's fundamentally, you definitely know this when you focus a high-powered laser beam down, and it causes the space to break down. It causes the atmosphere to break down. The electrons, I suppose, in void, it's there. But you look, there's all these things that you can't come across. Now, so this is going into it. When you really go into it, a lot of these mysteries are sort of like, they talk about the mystery, blah, blah, blah. They talk about, with a couple of your mates in the background, you say, oh, look, I think it's along this path. I think this has an answer to it. Or this had the bells and quality. I think it actually means this. You go along and you find out, it's like it's in the detail that people have missed. So you can imagine that the Bohr Copenhagen is a really bad lecturer, just incredibly bad, and it's just a complete, you know, 5 minutes, it's a joke. Then you get into the wave particle duality. That's getting onto a joke as well, but it takes a little bit longer to dismiss it. And then when you're looking at quantum communication, no one is actually saying, I don't think anyone worth their salt is saying, that I can actually communicate faster than the speed of light. I can violate causality. Now, so what's happening here is I'm trying to actually make this podcast good. Setting the microphone up, I'm going to improve it here. But I'm walking, doing this walk. Now, mercifully, it's downhill, but it's going to be a bit later uphill down this way. And I've got to really sort of, I suppose, stop yapping and really start pushing myself. But there's the noise, and I can hear the wind blowing, and I'm trying to do my best on it. So I'm sorry if there's a wind here. Okay, getting back to it. There's obviously, like, there's quantum mechanics, and then the quantum mechanics exists in our universe. Like, it's a quantum particle is got H, it's got angular momentum, it's really like, it's like Australians in Australia. You know, electron is an electron, a quantum electron in a quantum universe. It's got its behavior and things like that, and it does things. It says, oh, I'm just feeling, I'll go down, I had a hard day, I'll go down to the pub, or you know, you shout an insult as an Australian, they'll think for a while, and a minute later they'll work out that. And they'll shout something back. It's sort of like an electron is a bit like that. You put energy in and it goes back. But it's all in its context. So I think a lot of the problems people do is they say, and imagine my empty blackboard. There's nothing here. And look. And of course, it's behind the scenes. It's sort of like this magic act. You know, there's sort of black painted strings getting them to go along. Now, one of the more complicated, one of the simple things to imagine is that, say, from the is to do with detection of very small quantities of light, and why they appear as pulses and photons, And to be sure, I don't fully have the full explanation which satisfies me all the way. But there are a few things that you should know. So, look, imagine a quasar. So, pulsar is a neutron star flipping around. A quasar is a whole galaxy imploding with a massive supermassive black hole. It's sort of a galaxy in which they've fucked up and the whole galaxy is exploding. And these are incredibly bright things. They're so bright they're the only things we can see from the start of time. We can see quasars at the start. So these quasars are these enormous, enormously bright things. Okay. Look, I should say quantum mechanics and... The quantum mechanics does have a thing on gravity waves. There's an overlap here. But let's say you're the quasar. The quasar is very bright and a few hundred light years it's not so bright. And eventually by the time we get here we've got these massive telescopes which can actually only pick up a single photon coming in. So it's sitting there, a telescope's picking up, and it's a detector. And the detector is going, it's got this minimum thing it can say, sort of, yeah, or yep, or if it's less, it will be pause. Yep. That's called photon detection, people say, oh, what's going on with this? Now, the problem is, it's sort of really interesting thing. I've used photon counting in photonics. So in terms of molecular physics, you get a very weak light source. It's actually better to just count and just do photon counting. That's where you count the individual photons rather than trying to turn up the gain on anything. The gain is so low that you're using the fact that it's pinging. And you measure the ping. So the ping is... So the advantage is that you've got a ping. So rather than a very weak thing, it's a definite on. So it's like... rather than getting softer and softer, it's... Yep! Oh, it's quite, you can see, I don't know if you can hear the echo in here. Unfortunately, there's going to be no other bastards along here. But it's the fact that you have to only detect, you don't have to keep on going down, detecting less and less. You can detect a photon, and a photon's got so much energy, and that's easy enough to do. And so there's a lot of brain tweet... sort of amazing things that so you can imagine the quasar is like a wave, light's going as a wave, and the wave is getting shallower and shallower and shallower, and then the wave is now hitting. Imagine I have three space detectors. Now, there's nothing to stop those three detectors all detecting. So it's such that on average there will be one light. When I say so, one light particle per detector per all three detectors per hour. Okay, it's really, really faint. One light particle coming in. It's actually statistically, because it is random, you could really get all three detectors detect one photon each at the exact same time, immediately, and then a few seconds later, exact the same time. That might happen once in a million, billion years, that might come in. But on average, it's going to detect one here, and then one over here. You'll get the general impression, it's sort of like shoppers coming into your shops, and there's only so many shoppers out there, and they... you've got three stores, and they come into those three stores, and you can very much pick out that, you know, the number of shoppers out there from those three stores. Now, the sort of important thing is it's that the wave is coming really small. So this is, it's really small, and it's sort of like a, say, it's a millionth of the strength to make a photon. So it's really narrow. So you've got a meter detector, a meter size detector, and it will pick up. So one of the things is that the larger your detector is, the less time sensitive it is. Okay, it's one of those things. If it's a meter, you lose your time resolution to it. It's one of those things. So this is the first clue. Your detector's in the quantum universe. So often these people forget to say, well, this blackboard's also quantum, your detector's also quantum. So the bigger your detector is, less time resolution is, or the less frequency resolution. It depends how you build it. So you can build a very sensitive detector, but it will not be able to detect very rapid fires. It will tell you that there was a particle within here and here. If you want to make it smaller, you can make it faster, but you'll tell where it is. You begin to feel that, you know, that I'm detecting a wave with a wave. Now, the other thing is, say I bugger this. I'm just going to check if my detector's working. I'm going to take it away. I'm going to go down to my mum's with my detector and sit in the basement. I switch my detector on and just have a look and to see whether I can pick out that supernova. You know, that'll prove it. And what will happen is that your detector will have something called dark noise. And this is that the quantum wave functions in your detector will have, it's known as a dark current. Your photo detectors, your things will be just due to what people do is that they say, well, I want to detect, I can reduce it by cooling liquid nitrogen and stuff like that. I think you can reduce it a fair amount by going towards absolute zero and stuff like that. But the actual energy fluctuations means that it's sort of like, you know, you've got midgets running around the field, and every once in a while, two midgets run on top of each other and make a midget twice as high, and they run away again, and then every once in a while you get these quantum fluctuations, and you get these things called dark noise. Now, if you can imagine this dark noise coming along, you've got this very gentle quantum wave function going in, adding one extra midget to it, and these midgets will produce the dark noise. So the thing is that your quantum your detector produces pulses, because that's what it does. Detector. So if it didn't produce the dark noise, it's hard to say. Well, I don't know whether it would. To be quite honest, that's one of the things I'm really assume. Look, what can I say? When you work with these things, you got your detector, and you're looking for something. You don't automatically, and you're reading counts from a particular thing, you automatically say, that's 300. Well, what happens if you actually switch off the equipment completely? This dark noise will say that you'll get 295. Now, what happens is that you can cool it with liquid nitrogen and perhaps get it down to 200 and 195, so it's easier to pick, but it's really difficult to go across. So you've got this dark noise definitely causing it, but nonetheless, we know that the dark noise doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the macroscopic dark noise. There are mechanisms. This photon I could catch with my eye or with all these different things. It will trigger it. Now, it's in a very sense that this noise aspect is a sort of almost an organic thing. So, as long as the noise is relative, so a lot of the sensitivity of the of our feedback systems, our biological feedback systems, involve biological nerve noise. So all our nerves are digital. That there's your nerve doesn't you stick your finger on a hot plate and go ow, that doesn't send a more powerful nerve pulse back, saying more owie. It sends more of them back, more digital sort of digital ones back. So in a sense, quantum mechanics basically very digital. So that's, I don't know, that can give it to you. So the bottom line is that I do understand enough not to be completely stumped. Things stump me, but I do understand enough. It's not that I'm not stumped, I'm not amazed. There is something else. When someone says something about that is a particle, you detect particles, stuff like that, and at the same stage you ask them and they don't understand quantum mechanics and don't understand dark noise and stuff like that. Now, where that has affected me and saying, oh, I'll stop and I'll understand it, the person actually propagating the, and I want to stand up here and be a thing, there's sort of no sense that this is part of the answer here. Now, we'll talk about the Young slit experiment. And essentially, if I've got a wave coming from a point, and I've got another wave at the same frequency coming from a second point, points which are the same distance from those two points will receive waves which constructively interfere. Or at a point where the distance from that point is exactly a wavelength distance, I suppose that might be here, exactly a wavelength distance, that will mean that the waves will reappear. And so this process of, but if they're half a wave out, the waves all, and they're going from the same point at the same speed, the waves will always be out of phase. And the thing which confuses or people find amazing. So if I have two two holes and I'm looking up at their at light coming in, I will see banded structures, and for me this is just, for me, one of the joys of life. I get a laser beam, I put a hair in it, I see the diffraction patterns, I put a laser beam on the edge of a ruler, and it's sort of just, you know, just sheer joy. Or, say, I've got a Crius hat on, and you look through and you can see the diffraction patterns, the colours of the light going through the tiny holes and the cotton, that's just a sheer joy. Now, the thing is that if I dim them down or put them far enough away, the amount of light, and you can see where I'm going here, the amount of light decreases. And I will detect points. But the same is true, is that you don't have to have a double slit to detect points. This is where I find it, people want to get to the punchline so quickly that they don't really knock it over. I'm now going uphill a bit more, and I'll have to really push. And I'll probably get in trouble for taking such a long walk. This particular walk takes a long time. So I'm glad I've done the quasar with you. I think there's someone walking up here. Isn't that bloody amazing? So there's a light through the trees here, so I think it would have to be a cyclist. I may have to go quiet for a while, because that will freak them out. To hold my microphone, I've got my reading glasses on, so I really can't see very far ahead very clearly. In the Young Slit experiment, if you put detectors for each of those bright things, those detectors will eventually detect points, similar to detecting individual photons. Now this is there's a whole series of quantum mechanical reasons for this. Now I'll keep on speaking until I get up to this light and sort of work out normally you get all of Glenbrook and all of the Australian bush to yourself. It's very unusual that you see anyone with a torch. So definitely when you see military people or policemen sort of winding back, I think someone might be camping up here. Oh no, they're up ahead. I don't know if they're walking. They're walking towards him. The issue here is that you'll see particles, and the particles will appear to actually go into any of the ones. So if you see a particle, you can assume, you make the assumption that if I see a particle at one point, it must have been a particle at the slits. Sort of similar to, it must have been a particle at the quasar and been shooting it at particles across. That was a family group walking up to me. So yeah, there's one thing you could say, look, there's the quasar at the start of the universe, and indeed it's not a wave coming out, it's producing individual particles, and there's no it's going ahead, and I don't need to get this entire series of complex ideas. People saying, oh well, there's a guide wave. Is it? Just keep on going. So you can imagine this particle here, and this particle hits me, but it can actually, just a small little fraction of a billionth millionth of a degree will hit me, hit my mate, or hit my left eye and hit my right eye. You know, I'll see it. Yeah, whatever. So, but the problem here is that it starts to be physics nonsense. You know, that there is some feature in space which allows the particles to travel different paths, and that is that the particle. The view is that if I can see a particle here, if I can see a particle, and you do, say you see a pulse which looks like a particle from it, yeah, it's obviously hitting it one time, and it must be a particle before, but that's not necessarily so. That sort of makes sense. So you can see people saying, "Oh, look, the particle is going through this. Yeah, it's going through these three slits, but it must be, if it's a particle, it must be deciding which of these diffraction patterns to go to. So, you know, how does it do? Because the idea of a particle and diffraction, so a particle having wave properties is... Okay, so there's a big wallaby or something in the bush up there. Yeah, particle having these wave properties is something which is okay. If I get a electron and I fire it at slits or at a crystal, it will diffract in the form of a diffraction pattern. So that's called electron diffraction. So I can fire an electron beam at a surface and it bounces off the surface and it will have interference. So a particle has wave properties, but a wave doesn't have particle properties. You know, the wave it comes out. So a particle, which is an electron, and bear in mind that I don't see the particle of an electron as actually a little dot. I see it as as an electron wave. Now even that, so even that electron, when it moves as a wave, I can fire that electron as if it was light. So this is also true for neutrons. I can fire neutrons into a crystal and they will diffract. That is not only is the neutron a wave, but it's actually an extended wave, far more than my description of it. So my, how do I describe it? So the electron which I'm considering is the wave function. It corresponds to the information that I want to know about. So electron of a particular wave function size will interact with a what's it, a lattice, and will bounce off the lattice and bounce off the regular array of nuclei, and it will form a diffraction pattern very much like that of Young's modulus, and we will detect those electrons as individual electrons for sure, because it will carry it as current. It's like photons, carry it as current, but it will select to go through. Say they've got 10, a lot of electrons, diffraction tends to be in little points, like spots on the side of a quall. These electrons will, say, go into one of the 10 slots of it, like the old clown with the ball. It will appear that way. But what in actual fact happens means that that electron, its wave function interacts over a large area, and it's so its wave function is described in a large way, and I will actually detect those electrons as its individual electrons, but overall they will pick up like that those clowns. And there'll be a few on the side, a gap, a few, then a large amount in the very centre, a gap, a few, and then a few off the side. And this is, this is really coming into it. So there's all these considerations, and to try and, this is dark noise, the fact that electrons also are obviously, you know, very much particles, but the particle wave function expands, but we don't, for light, we sort of somehow say there's a specialist things. We don't say that electron has a wave particle duality. We say it's a particle with, we say light's got a wave particle duality, because I'm not going to attribute any physics to space. I'm not going to talk about dark noise and things like that. Now, I suppose I'll do another one about the Bell's paradox and entanglement, because this it's this sort of I suppose entanglement really tells you that the universe is conserved and connected, but it doesn't mean it's magical. Okay, thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.